The following podcast contains adult language, explicit content, and original opinions.
All content is the opinion of Comics Brew and no one else.
It is meant for mature audiences only, so be warned.
Okay, folks, we're going to start this day off on a little bit of a somber note. Later this Wednesday, there's going to be a massive tragedy that strikes...
The worst thing that's happened
that
this
strikes
year.
Comics Brew Place.
Well, I mean, that's a little bold, Tyler.
I think you're going to really need to pay attention, and we're really going to need to rely on you.
Yeah, we need your help with something, because one of our characters has something very, very bad happen to them.
And it's going to require all of us to bring this tragedy back from the brink.
You need to make this right.
So be sure to check out Comics Brew Plays this Wednesday, and you know our hearts go out to the family of that tragedy's character. It's gonna be a rough night.
So tune in to Comics Brew Plays, and then hit us up.
Yep, absolutely. We'll now begin with our regularly scheduled Comics Brew.
Get your tickets ready.
Ayo, this is actually the Thanksgiving episode of Comics Brew. So happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
First and foremost.
Gobbles.
Gobbles.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
You are sufficiently stuffed. Although this will come out before Turkey Day.
Yeah, yeah. But we're not going to have one. Oh, yeah, we are going to have a Comics Brew Plays before this, too.
Yeah, so just, you know, get ready to start doing your stomach stretches. Get it all stretched out. Get it ready.
I've been working on that for 30 years.
Me, too. Nice and prepped.
Well, as always, I'm Josh.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Adam.
And we got a brand new episode full of comics, brews, news, and a third segment.
And stews.
News, brews, and stews. Comic stew, the new cooking show we're going to start.
That's another shoot, another offshoot.
Yeah.
I guess first and foremost, we should mention that we're brown bagging it today.
Yeah, that's our special third segment, is we each bought each other beers to give thanks for being around this long. I guess. So yeah, we're drinking out of brown bags, and we don't know.
Give thanks for beer, I guess.
Yeah. So I bought.
Well, I mean, helps me deal with you two chocolate fucks.
So I bought for Adam.
I bought for Josh.
And I bought for Tyler.
Yeah. And the beer I got is it's not bad. It's decent.
Yeah.
At mine the end, is, we gotta guess what they are.
Mine is sweet. And it's definitely from an Oregon-based place called Hub Works. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing with bottle caps. Oh, yeah. You didn't?
No.
Oh.
It's right there.
Mine's Southern Tier Brewing.
And I got something from Alesmith.
Oh, shit. I didn't even know. I didn't even look at the cap on yours.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be trying to guess that at the end.
Here. Yeah, I think mine's an IPA, to be honest.
I think mine's an IPA as well, but when I get to the bottom, I guess I'll make another.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident mine is some sort of delicious porter or stout.
I think it's an ale, actually, to be honest. It's light enough to be an ale.
That's true, it is lighter, but it tastes like cinnamon fucking rolls.
Goodness, yeah. It tastes amazing. Tyler
tastes
got
like
you a good one there.
Caramel cinnamon tasty treat, as John would put it.
This is weird. Like, we're nice to each other in our beer choices.
He thought I was going to get him, like, some
dude,
some eye
last
like, some
time this
thing.
Happened, Josh got me a pineapple fucking ghost pepper beer that made me vomit.
Sure
oh,
did.
That was pretty funny, actually.
So, yeah, I like that we're a little gun-shy after the last one, so we'd be nice to each other from
yeah.
that one.
So we got some
plenty
cool,
of news.
Cool
this
news this week.
Lots of it too.
So we're gonna do this in descending order, literally comics brew style. It's gonna go from like movies and television to comics to brews.
Yeah.
So let's start off with Deadpool's Wet on Wet Bob Ross homage.
Yeah.
Perfect in every way. Deadpool shaped.
It's the first Deadpool 2 teaser that we've got.
Yeah. There was more drug references in this than I expected there to be.
Like fresh powder. God, I love cocaine.
God, I love cocaine. And then the very next cut is a different painting. And he's like, God, I'm high as fuck right now.
Yeah, it is really great. Like, the majority of it is at him one being point, Bob Ross painting.
At one point, he just freaks out and throws his shit.
But then we do get a lot of quick cuts. Quick
like,
cut teaser style stuff of the actual movie.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead
like
is back.
I like her new haircut and just like the one shot is her just flipping somebody off.
Right. Also, like, if you notice, like, it took them 17 years to do yellow spandex.
Mm. She had that last movie.
Okay, 16 years.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I love the outfits that they've got going on in First Class and the first Deadpool.
Pretty cool shot of Domino.
Yeah.
I missed the shot of Domino. I did
She's just silhouetted coming through a door.
Yeah.
I did like the shot of Deadpool and Blind Owl the couch. Yeah. And she's pointing the gun the wrong direction. And he just moves it. Yeah.
Oh, that was great. So this movie looks like it's shaping up to be as good as the first
TJ Miller's back. We saw him.
Yeah.
God, I love him. You look like your face fucked up. I don't even remember.
I look like an avocado fucked an older avocado. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it looks like a ball sack with teeth. Good God, you're hideous.
What did they say about a Sharpay?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
So moving on, stoked. We've got a couple more things. One thing I want to note is that Doomsday Clock is next week.
Yeah. Well, this week. 2 days.
And we are definitely going
to
read that as a group.
Yeah, that's our group review for the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. But and whatever Marvel puts out. Like they announced a second ago, like today, the record day, which is Monday at Midnight Live.
Yeah.
they announced the Infinity, or they teased the Infinity. They hold Infinity, and it's Peter Quill and Wolverine and Carol, and that says the countdown begins
in
February.
And
they're
all holding an Infinity Stone. So this is the second time we've seen Wolverine since
Legacy.
Second Rebirth with same shit.
Yeah, okay.
But, I mean, he just showed up and hasn't popped up anywhere else, so I guess this is where he's really
Is it still old man Logan in the new
No, it's new Logan.
This is real Logan back to life.
Okay.
It's new Logan.
New? Is that new?
But I guess leading in and around that, there's this teaser from DC Comics called Pancakes, and it's just a stack of pancakes in a diner with some butter on them.
For like 40 seconds.
And then at the very end.
Pile of flapjacks.
Yeah, and then at the very end, it's Doomsday Clock from Jeff Johns and Gary Frank.
Yeah, that's November. Yeah.
December 22nd.
No.
November.
December is probably going to have an issue too, but...
Oh, shit, this week's issues of Metal, last ones that are this month.
Yeah?
Yeah, no more Metal until, like, the middle of December.
Well, that sucks. Well, there's a good one that we have this week that you're going to talk about.
Oh, for sure.
I'm going to join you, and then the actual next issue.
So on this Pancakes video, comments are actually disabled, like DC disabled comments on it.
Oh, why?
I have no idea, but I think it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't make any sense either. There's also, as of this live recording, there's 23,000 views on the fucking pancake video.
I just like that there's that little fun tease they did.
Yeah. So the next one we got is a Doomsday Clock teaser of Watchmen. It's narrated. It's narrated by Q.
Oh.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
James Woods, right?
No, that's not James Woods. It's like John...
The guy that basically looks like James Woods.
But it's not.
It's not James Wood. It's John Bark.
No... That's a good one, though. I mean, it was a little funny. John DeLancey.
Okay.
So it's totally narrated by John DeLancey. And it's like 15 seconds long, and it just gets you hyped for Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, just a bunch of little quick cuts of some of the art. And Gary Frank art is amazing.
I was talking to Adam about that. I was like, earlier today, I was like, I'm just excited because it's going to be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be pretty. That's it could be a shit story, and I'm still going to read it.
You know, I think it's actually going to be decent.
Uh-huh.
We're probably going to have, like, here's my prediction. It's going to be great art. It's going to be a decent story that we're probably going to have some issues with because, obviously, they have to twist Watchmen characters.
Nerds. Yeah, and they
like, especially if Rorschach is in it, they're doing...
They're bringing him back somehow, right?
Either he's being brought back or it's being twisting the original story. Something is going to be different. We'll have an issue with something. But I think overall, Jeff Johns is probably going to do a good job.
Yeah.
He's never done a bad job that I can think of. I can't think of a bad Jeff Johns comic.
Is this the Hubs IPA?
What?
Is this the Hubworks IPA?
No.
Just their standard IPA?
It is not.
Damn it. Okay. We got more news, like more movie kind of big stuff going on.
Ooh, something I'm stoked about.
James Franco is going to be Multiple Man. Yeah. In a Simon Kinberg movie. This is a weird announcement, I think. Why do we need one? Is it just relying on the star power of James Franco? Is that it?
Or you mean why do we need James Franco? Why do we need a Multiple
Man? Why do we need a Multiple Man movie?
Because, well, did you ever read X-Factor? Peter David's X-Factor is fantastic, and Jamie in that is a really great character. Because the way he took it is... every one of his splits is not just like a copy of him. It's a section of his personality.
Oh, okay. So it's like his like, anger, his humility. Yeah, but
not even that simple. Like they all are just like
this one's got OCD and this one's anger management. Manic
depressive.
Yeah,
or...
yeah. They're all a little different.
This one's got my karate moves.
But like some of them, like he would see. Okay, he sent dozens out to go learn shit, and then brought them all back into himself to gain that knowledge, kind of thing.
Cool.
And like one of them even tried to betray him. Like it Jamie became this really great character. I think James Franco could do a good job at that. But like it's a great character. If you want to make a X-Men movie around a random low tier character, you can't.
Jamie Madrox is a pretty good choice then.
Yeah. Jamie Madrox is a great choice because you can do so many weird things with him.
I think it's Madrox because of I think it's French. I think his name is
Jamie Madrox. Yeah. Maybe. Could be. I guess we'll see.
But Madrox, sure, if you want to be American. It's Madrox, damn it.
He is American.
Madrox.
Madrox.
Speaking of pronunciations of shit, I am so glad. I mean, this is kind of a spoiler for Justice League, but I'm glad they pronounced Darkseid in the movie.
Oh, for sure.
I hate.
Darkseid.
Oh, God, that makes me so unreasonably mad.
Darkseid. For Darkseid.
Like, even when.
Just sounds like interracial porn.
Kirby. Was saying that it's Darkseid. People are like, it's Darkseid. No, fuck you. The creator said it's Darkseid.
If we got some time at the end of this episode, we'll talk about it. But we all three went
isn't
and saw Justice
League.
Isn't
there a way to spell, like, isn't that, like, the way Darkseid is spelled, isn't that one way of side? Like, one way to spell side? Isn't there a
meaning
to that?
If you pronounce it.
Or it's, like, an English for spelling, or.
Yeah, if you pronounce it in, like, other languages, pronunciation styles. Kind of.
In Jewish style, it's Darkseid.
Oh, God.
I was just thinking more like theater or color is spelled differently in
that's
England.
That's Britain.
So I thought, that's why I always thought that side was somewhere along those lines as well.
Could be. I mean, it's not. I don't think Darkseid isn't like totally incorrect if you just look at the spelling. I think it's incorrect because fucking Jack Kirby
said it. Yeah.
He said it how it's pronounced.
The guy who made it said it that way.
Yeah.
He gets trump card on that. It's a huge card.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyways, we're going a little bit off here.
I would see it because I'm gonna go see the Disaster Artist next month.
Oh, I'm so down with that.
Fucking cannot wait to see that.
You like the Room, right?
I've never seen it.
I have to see the Room.
I know.
I will watch the Room with you.
Shit. Yeah, I do want to see the Disaster Artist,
dude. But no, really, I will watch I will watch the Room with you. So that you will watch it. Like, I want to make sure this happens because I don't think you'll appreciate the Disaster Artist without seeing it first.
You know who is a Disaster Artist?
Who?
Eddie Braganza.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
What a tool.
So there's that big old Hollywood scandal going around.
So, yeah, the big thing in Hollywood right now is obviously to out sexual harassment, which, you know, should be a thing always. But
yeah, but right now,
it's
kitsch.
Hot. Yeah. I mean, it started with Harvey Weinstein, devolved into Kevin Spacey, and then it's kind of branched out to almost everyone.
Everybody. I mean, almost no.
Louis C.K., George Takei. Now, finally, now after years of underground accusation.
Yeah, we have talked about this before.
Eddie Braganza is finally fired from DC Comics Group. Jesus Christ. Warner Brothers and DC Entertainment have terminated the employment of DC Comics Group editor Eddie Braganza, said DC Entertainment in a statement to The Hollywood Reporter. We are committed to eradicating harassment and ensuring that all employees as well as our freelance community are aware of our policies, are comfortable reporting any concerns, and feel supported by our company. So,
yeah, it's good news.
The shitty thing is that cartoonist Joan Hilty said that Braganza kissed and groped her at McGee's Museum in the early 2000s. This is like 15 years, man.
These are not new accusations. Like, there's been a.
That's too late for them to do anything legally about it, though.
Statute of limitations only exists for murder, felony charges. This is a misdemeanor at most.
No, it did exist. Statute of limitations did exist for this, but I believe it's California recently repealed it.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I think it's California. Some state recently repealed statute of limitations for
sexual charges?
Yeah.
So it's in a New York bar.
I don't know where that would stand legally. I just know exist.
In 2010, DC editor Janelle Asselin organized a group of employees to appoint a joint complaint to HR against Braganza, who continued to rise to the ranks and was named executive editor later that year. But Braganza was demoted 2 years later to story editor after allegations that he forcibly kissed a woman at WonderCon surfaced in a Bleeding Cool article.
Yeah, like I said, this isn't new, but it's finally like taken seriously.
Right, and okay, on the one hand, he was a big part of some of the coolest DC comic stories. The Batman Superman stories, like
we were talking yesterday after Justice League, what's so funny about Truth, Justice, and the American Way?
Yeah.
He was the editor for that.
Yeah, but he was also on like Batman Superman where they were all hunted by the villains. It became
President Luthor.
Yeah. It became a animated series. Public Enemies, thank you. And then he was also part of Justice League Doom, Infinite Crisis, and he was an editor on Blackest Night. But that does not supersede your conduct as a person.
Yeah, and he has, I mean...
what a dick.
He has caused people to quit. So what I kind of hope is that, like DC says, they're committed to making their place a place where people feel like they're safe there. They can come out. If something happens, they can, reveal what happened without fear of reprisal.
Right.
It'll draw good people back to DC.
Which, we've seen in the past that when this happens, there's kind of a tumult, and then it calms down. You know what I mean? Just like any kind of storm or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see what does happen to this in the near future. Like, if Berganza's just blacklisted from comics in general. He probably is.
Probably.
At least for a while.
I mean,
he's going to have to wait for...
10 years. Mel Gibson, 10 years.
Mel Gibson didn't sexually harass anybody. No. He just said bad shit about Jews.
It's true. Like you do often.
I never do that. I call you out when you do that.
Marvel also has a new editor-in-chief.
Yeah, it's not the only editing
shakeup. Eddie Berganza.
But this one isn't quite as controversial, like coming out of allegations. This just happened.
Somebody got promoted.
So Mr. Cebulski, C.B. Cebulski, is now editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics. Now he's replacing Axel Alonso. Alonso's been there for almost 8 years. He's been there since 2009.
Oh, yeah, wow. Is that as editor-in-chief? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
As editor-in-chief, yeah.
He
replaced Quesada.
Yeah. And
is there any word why this other guy is stepping down?
He's not stepping down. He quit Marvel.
Oh.
Yeah, Axel Alonso, he's like, I'm done. I'm retiring.
Is he retiring from everything? Is he just kicking the fuck back?
Probably retiring from Marvel.
Or is it just Marvel? Because, I feel like retiring from Marvel and retiring just in general are two completely different moves.
Probably.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with Axel. Maybe he'll pop over to DC. They have an editor-in-chief position gone.
We've mentioned C.B. Cebulski a lot in the past.
Oh, he's a big Marvel fan.
He's always got, the inside scoop, or at least the real story. Like, not the real story, but he's the one who said, why do you think we're not focusing on the X-Men right now? Because of the movies. Why do you think the Fantastic Four aren't very big right now? Because we don't have merchandising rights.
Yeah, most of the time he'll toe the company line, but he has, like you said, he's said things that, and we go, okay, duh.
Yeah.
But he's been real about it a lot, and he's been around so long, he's had a lot of different positions at Marvel, and he's a solid writer.
Yeah, he's been in there since 2002. One of his biggest things was he greenlit The Runaways for Brian K. Vaughan.
I'm so thankful for, because that shit was good.
Yeah, but recently, he actually moved to Shanghai recently, and...
He was a talent scout for Marvel in Asia for a long time.
He still is, but yeah. He's now Vice President of International Business and Brand Management in Marvel Asia. He lives in Shanghai, China, and he has essentially done a self-stated goal of reverse engineering the Marvel brand in foreign markets. He actually was a talent scout recently at the latest San Diego Comic-Con. He announced two new Chinese, still within the Marvel Universe characters, written by fully Chinese creators and artists. Those titles include Sword Master, drawn by Chen Ziyun and written by Ji Shanshan, as well as Aero, which is A-E-R-O, drawn by Zhu Ming and written by Zhao Jianjun.
Yes,
at the time, those titles didn't receive much coverage on our side, but over there, huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Dude, China's we're invading the Marvel market.
I mean, Marvel movies are big over there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. I mean, China is the largest cinematic audience.
It actually is. That's
literally.
Yeah.
So, Josh, you've bitched and whined about Transformers, but you know what the biggest Transformers market is?
Oh, China. Yeah, China. Just like it was for World of Warcraft, just like it was for Pacific Rim. I know that.
But it's... So I think it's actually kind of... a good move for Marvel, at least business-wise.
Of course it is.
To put Cebulski at such a good position because he's already for years been tapping what could be their biggest new market.
Yeah, and he's also he's got ties over
on
there.
The new pulse.
And he has business ties there. He has
relations.
Exactly. He knows contacts. Hey, you guys want it in?
Others. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like this. I think Cebulski's going to do a good job. It's not that I didn't like Axel. I mean, he did a fantastic job for
but
years.
But he's just got, like, in the last 2 years, he's just been mired by just bad PR moves from Marvel.
And, you know, as editor-in-chief, you are the person.
You're in front, yeah. Yeah,
you're the front man for that, and people are kind of tired of the way Marvel does stuff sometimes.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't on him who said that, but he was definitely pointed out when they were like, the problem with Marvel sales is it's too diverse, and then, like, that came down on him, you know.
Which, you know, isn't...
It's not fair, and it's not fair, but it's what happened, right?
Yeah.
That's how the public views things, right?
Yeah.
I forgot that DC doesn't have an editor-in-chief right now. They have two publishers. They have co-publishers, but they don't have an editor-in-chief.
I thought they had an editor-in-chief, too.
Let me see.
I mean, okay, you might be right, because, I mean, Johns is creative.
No, he's a DC Entertainment president.
He was their creative director.
He was chief creative officer, yeah.
Creative officer.
Comics. So DC Comics named Bob Harris in 2010 as editor-in-chief. But I don't think there is an editor-in-chief right now.
Well, either way, this is
it's good news for Marvel.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's a lot of editorial shakeups going on right now. Some of them from just positions of people being done, and others getting good new jobs, and some from dudes fucking up hard.
Yeah, absolutely. What else we got in the news this week? Oh, so Tyler, you weren't with Chris and I when we went and saw this, but
yeah, I mean, so you guys went to Image Expo like 2 years ago,
2015, yeah.
Yeah, and we have been like a new Image comic will come out, and you guys are like, oh, that was at this.
Yeah, absolutely. For about the last year, I think this is the last one. So back in 2015, in March or April. Ivan Brandon got up on stage and said, hey, I'm doing a new comic with Asad Ribic. And I immediately told Tyler, I was like, hey, Asad Ribic's got an Image comic coming out.
Hell yeah.
And
Asad Ribic is amazing.
That was 2 years ago. but this week, Ivan Brandon released a 6-page preview of that comic.
And didn't he say something like he was letting, like, the reason it's taking so long is he's letting
Asad take his time. He's like, yeah, do it. Yeah, yeah. So when Ivan Brandon got on stage, he was actually promoting two comics. He did his one with another guy, and then this one, and then he stayed up there, and he was like, "So I don't know if you guys know Asad Ribic, and Secret Wars was going on at the time."
Yeah.
And people were like, "Woo, yeah, Asad Ribic." He's like, "Well, we're doing a comic together called Versus," and it's like, "Okay." And then he goes, "I don't know when it's coming out, and I'm just gonna let the guy take his time." And people were like, "Yeah, that sounds right. That's about right.
That makes
sense. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, absolutely." So the story behind Versus is privately funded armies of superstar soldiers marching to battle for fame, profit, and the glory of their sponsor nations. When a new generation of soldiers arrive, top gladiator Sada Flynn is about to discover how fleeting the limelight can be and how punishing. So he's an older bounty hunter warrior in this society where prominence in the battlefield is key. And so
yeah,
Asad Ribic
like a rad
is
comic.
If you open that link, Tyler, you'll see some of them.
Images. I looked at the pages before.
They are gorgeous, dude. It's like the guy kind of looks like a modern Kree a little bit. He's got blue skin and very much short-cropped hair. But I don't know. Asad Ribic, man, there's not much to like him out there.
He's one of these like top-tier artists. I mean, he never does a bad job.
Yeah, like his Namor is really good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously.
I mean, we talked about he was doing Secret Wars.
We love Secret Wars.
That was one of the most beautiful events in the last couple of years.
Didn't he do God of Thunder? With Jason Aaron? Yep, it's totally Asad Ribic, starting at issue 25 of Thor God of Thunder.
So good shit there. But yeah, I'm stoked for this comic. I'm probably going to pick it up at least, you know.
Yeah, I'm definitely checking it out because this is like Tyler said, this is the last of that fucking like, hey, we know that comic.
Yeah, and so this is some cool shit. Check it out. You can probably find the 6-page preview all over the place.
But Adam will link it on the website for sure. So
no, it's three news stories total. So I'm doing the top I did three not, and then dropping the rest of them off.
I did not know that Pabst was the brand behind the Not Your Father's
and
batch of things.
Neither did I till I took
till we
the
read
story.
The story. So Pabst is breaking into spirits. Not Your Father's bourbon. We have to try this at least once, right?
Oh, I'm gonna.
In a move towards diversifying its portfolio and reaching out to spirits consumers, Pabst Brewing Company announced a foray into the craft spirits space with a launch of Not Your Father's Bourbon. The 86 proof, 43% ABV, small batch bourbon is the first product to be launched in a new line of spirits under the Not Your Father's label, which includes the popular Not Your Father's root beer flavored malt beverage as well as hard vanilla cream ginger ale, and others.
Not Your Father's Ginger Ale is fucking amazing.
Yep. Yeah, the whole line is
great. I agree.
The whole line is great. There's a couple I still haven't tried of them yet, but I've never been disappointed with any of them.
I haven't had his Not Your Father's Hard Cider. That's the one I haven't had.
That. There's a pie one, too. Not Your Father's Apple Pie. Not Your Mother's Apple Pie.
Something like that, yeah.
Do you guys read why this bourbon, like what makes this bourbon kind of a little special, like what their twist on it is?
Does it taste like root beer?
A touch of Madagascar vanilla.
No, shit.
Nice. So I don't know if you guys could tell based on the beers I buy, but a bourbon with some vanilla in it sounds fucking great to me.
Oh, for sure, dude. Would you have this over ice or would you have it neat?
I'd probably try both, but it'd probably be over ice, right?
I think so, too.
Yeah, we'll try both. I mean, I'll get a bottle. That's more than one cup in a bottle.
So let's see.
A big cup.
How about this? The bottle is just
a weird shaped cup.
Yeah. So. The move into spirits comes at a time when the beer industry has ceded 35 million barrels or 11 billion servings of beer to wine and spirits over the last 20 years. According to Heineken USA CEO Ronald Del Elzin, who spoke at last month's National Beer Wholesalers Association convention in Las Vegas. In fact, beer's so-called share of throat compared to wine and spirits has eroded from 62% to a mere 50% during that period. So that's pretty rough. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, palates change, trends change, and I'm sure this doesn't announce any kind of scarcity for the brewing industry. They're still going to fucking make their money, but it's nice to see that they're deciding to, you know, branch out.
Makes sense. I mean,
I'm stoked for it.
Right.
So we don't have any other news, do we?
That's all the news.
We've got some dope ass reviews. Josh, I think you should go last.
Yeah, I agree.
Adam, what do you got?
Yeah, I'll go first. So I am about a month ago. I reviewed Family Trade number one.
Is this an amber ale?
No.
Damn it.
Is mine an IPA?
No.
It's not?
No.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Mine an ale?
Yours is from Southern Tier.
I'll give you this. You're half right.
Okay.
So
it's an ale?
Yes, it's an ale. It's a double ale. All
right.
It's ale 2, the sequel to ale.
It's ale squared. It's an ale into and of itself.
Sorry, I'm pulling up creators here real quick. I probably shouldn't have this.
Oh, fucking shit. Eddie Braganza's an editor on the book I got tonight.
One of his last credited ones.
I bet you he'll still have his name on metal.
Yeah, he'll probably be on... His name will be on the books for a while, I think.
Sorry, Adam.
Oh, you're all good. I just keep vamping. I'm okay, gotcha. Waiting for the page to load.
I could just wait for you to get there it
There we
done.
Go. All right. So, Family Trade number 2. Story is by Justin Jordan and Nikki Ryan, and the art and cover are both by Morgan Beam. Now, in the first book, you follow this girl that works for a secret family that kind of helps this floating nation stay balanced. No one criminal organization or corrupt politician gets too much power. And at the end of the first one, you find out that she fucks it up. The second one is all her dealing with her fuck up. It's the exposition issue.
This one is?
Yeah, this one is. So it's a lot of talking. It's a ton of like her talking to the people that run the family, how she fucked up, what they want from her, her own little plan to try and fix shit. And that's pretty much it. Is she's looking for this proof to show that what she overheard is actually happening. And so it's literally just exposition of her trying to figure this out while being belittled because she's one of the newest members of the family to actually do field work or wet work, whatever you'd like to call it. And that's pretty much this entire book.
It's
the setup issue. It's definitely the slowest. It's going to be probably the slowest issue out of the whole thing. It's not an exciting read by any means. If the whole book was like this or if the whole story was like this, I'd probably quit reading. But after reading the first one, I know it probably won't be that way. So I'll give it issue 3. But yeah, it's an exposition issue. Not a lot of exciting stuff. Definitely not the one you want to jump in on. If you are interested in this, this is only issue 2. So pick up issue 1 first. But yeah, that's pretty much it. It's just exposition and plot building, and now we're ready to hit the ground running for issue 3.
Cool. Well, I have for you guys a review of Doctor Strange number 381.
Is this the Donny Cates
cover art? Is dope.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is as Doctor Strange returns to the legacy numbering. Big old change. New writer, Donnie Cates. Art by Gabriel Hernandez Walta. And colors by the incredible Jordi Belair.
Oh, nice.
So this is a big change because if you look at the cover, and they made no secret that this is coming. Doctor Strange is no longer the Sorcerer Supreme.
Oh, no, not again.
Well, guess who it is this time?
Brother Voodoo.
Loki.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, Loki is the Sorcerer Supreme.
That's not bad.
And, you know, like you might expect in some big change like this, they're going to drag this out for a couple issues. How did he become the Sorcerer Supreme? Now, you get the answer pretty much right off the bat.
Nice. Is he no longer worthy?
No. So this book is, it starts out being narrated by Doctor Strange, kind of putting into place his new, what's going on. A character from the previous story, Zelma, his new assistant, she's still there. And a guy is standing outside of the Sanctum Sanctorum at 177A Bleecker Street, and there's a sign under that that says, under new management, and it's floating 20 feet above the ground.
The city is? The building is? Nice.
And a guy's like, was this house always floating? And she's like, no, yeah, that's new. He doesn't like walk-ins. It's okay, though. I can help. What's going on?
Is it the librarian chick?
Yeah.
Nice.
Zelma Stanton. So she lets this dude in. Okay, one of the things that I like about this book is, if you guys have seen Thor Ragnarok, Doctor Strange's part in that, it's just like, he's really, like, casual and blasé about the magic that he's doing. Like, scene will just change. Shit just happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
He doesn't, like, hand wave and do big crazy spells a lot, but just magic shit goes on. She pulls out of her backpack, like, a ladder that comes out like a magician, you know, just pulling ribbon out of nowhere. She just pulls a ladder that comes out of her backpack
nice.
To get into the building. So we get introduced to the kind of the new layout. There's just magical creatures and shit everywhere in there. There's a door that's chained up with an accident, and some guy's like, somebody really wants in this room? She's like, yeah, it's a whole fucking thing. Like, just deal with it. And we get introduced to, you know, this is basically new status quo. And as Stephen Strange narration fades away, we learn that he's saying, well, why am I not Sorcerer Supreme? Well, there was a contest, and I lost. Like, that's it. It's a tournament. Strange lost, Loki won. Now Loki,
a magic tournament?
Yeah, now, like, Loki is a Sorcerer Supreme.
Playing cards?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
I don't think the Sorcerer Supreme title cares about playing cards. They would, if they did that, it'd be like Yu-Gi-Oh, where they play a card and then the shit actually happens in real life.
That was all
but
holographic.
It was a Magic the Gathering reference.
I know.
Yeah, we know.
It wasn't a good one, though.
No, it was better than you think.
So. Jesus. So basically, we get introduced to Loki at a setting that Doctor Strange has been, a bar with no doors, just a magical bar.
Oh, is it the bar with no name?
It's called the bar with no doors, but basically, yeah.
Gotcha.
Like, the magic version of that. And Loki's basically just like, he introduced himself as, you must have confused me with my predecessor. I do not make deals. My name is Loki Laufeyson, god of lies, mischief, and stories, and I'm the fucking Sorcerer Supreme. Literally says fucking, like, it's bleeped out.
Yeah. Nice.
But, as you might expect, nobody trusts him.
Of course,
period.
He's Loki.
But, so I mentioned that Zelma just uses magic, sort of like Doctor Strange and Thor Ragnarok.
Like, yeah, whatever, magic.
Yeah. Loki's trying to get people's help, and he's trying to be charming and get their help. And then he's just suddenly like, nope, and just starts flipping on magic like that.
Nice.
Just doing shit. And as the book kind of goes, you know, you get what you'd expect, a confrontation with Thor. We do see where Strange is, which you might not expect.
Is he in hell?
No.
Okay.
He's just living his life, but what he's actually doing is kind of funny. We get the impression from this that Loki is actually trying to do a good job as the Sorcerer Supreme, but nobody trusts him at all.
Like, he can't get a leg up?
Yeah, but every time, like, he tries to convince people that he's doing the right thing, and then when they're like, nah, fuck you, you're Loki, he just flips something, he's like, fucking look at this!
As a sorcerer, I'm huge.
Yeah.
I've done many great things. All my friends tell me I have the best spells.
Yeah. And basically, he's just kind of like loses patience with everybody. But all of his scenes in this, they follow that same kind of path where he tries to convince somebody that he's actually trying to do a good job. They don't believe him. And then he flips the script on him and shows him, like, fucking come on, guys.
Yeah.
So we don't get a whole lot of exactly, you know, the main plot of what's going to be this story. But the way Donny Cates writes Loki is fantastic. And if you haven't been reading Marvel lately, Loki is actually good now.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Is he still, like, young Agent of Asgard Loki?
He's that age.
Okay.
The whole thing is, like, there was Loki died, then there was Kid Loki, who was, like, a reincarnation that actually was good, and then old Loki killed him and took over his place, and now they're sort of melded together.
Gotcha.
And so Loki is, he's no longer, like, the mustache-twirling god of evil. He really is just the god of mischief. And so he is a good person, sort of, always out for himself sort of thing. But at the end of the day, he is a good person, but nobody trusts him. And so him as Sorcerer Supreme is fantastic. I love it. It's like Loki, Doctor Strange, and Doctor Doom are like the three people that are right there for Sorcerer Supreme.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so giving it to Loki, I think, is fantastic. And I'm going to keep reading this.
Is Doom still the infamous Iron Man right now?
I mean, that title's still going.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
Weird.
He's kind of like that. Nobody trusts him. I would love to
see a book as Doom as the Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah, it'd be fucking rad.
Right? So before we go into the Batman Who Laughs, I want to tell a joke. Adblock ruined my sex life. There are no more hot singles near me. So I have the Batman Who Laughs.
And I want you to go last because I also read this.
Nice. It's written by James Tynion IV, artist by Riley Rossmo, colors by Ivan Placencia, and edited by Eddie Braganza. Comic opens with the Bat Who Laughs laying cards out on a table in front of someone. And he, like, basically is like, the king, that's obviously, and Superman. It's about an outsider who can see the good in all of us. The queen is Wonder Woman. About how we all have the power to fight for what is right. And the Jack, I assume, is Batman. Or how we can each overcome our darkest moments. But then he lays down a Joker card. And he goes, but this, there's no way to know what's going to happen next with this card.
You know what I liked about this scene? Remember the beginning of The Killing Joke?
Yes. When Batman's Batman, like, and Joker
the
playing Joker's
cards, playing out cards, and Batman is the one talking. Joker doesn't say anything because it's not the Joker.
Mm.
But Batman is the only one talking, kind of narrating the playing of what's going on.
Yeah.
This is a weird twist on that scene where the Joker's laying out cards and Batman is the one narrating.
Batman narrating
the same person.
Absolutely. So then we cut to Earth -22, Gotham City, many years ago. An explosion. And then we hear the Joker's voice. Which one was that, Bats? Was it Mercy Hospital or maybe Gotham General? It's hard to keep the chaos straight this late in the game. And Batman has been tied up by the Joker and muzzled by the Joker. Like, he's got, like, a cloth over his mouth or some shit.
Yeah, I do think it's worth mentioning that this look of the Joker is the animated series.
Mm-hmm. It's also up. And the geography of the town is very much like Batman No Man's Land level of destruction.
Yeah.
Like, Gotham is fucked right now. Excuse me. And we have the Joker going through his typical spiel. And what I like about this is a two-page spread, everything slanted to the left.
Yeah.
And it's just Joker being a maniac, talking about how, like, right before I dissolved these people in acid, I took their stuff. Like, I took Jim's pipe, his glasses, and his coat. And he puts on Gordon's coat, and he just kicks Batman in the side.
Yeah.
From there, we get, like, Joker's lined up a series of families with young children.
Another good two-page spread that...
is cracked by a Batarang Batman with a Joker left. Show Adam, this is fucking ridiculous.
Oh, that's pretty rad.
Yeah, and the Joker has lined up these families with young children, and he's just bringing them around the corner into Crime Alley and shooting the parents in the head. And it's all just this really, really dark, sick, twisted way that Joker's going to make Batman break.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. Batman kicks the shit out of Joker and then eventually is forced to break his neck. And he breaks Joker's neck, and this gas leaks out of Joker's face. And Batman's the only one close enough to inhale it. A couple weeks later, or 2 days later, Clark and Batman are having a discussion, and let's say, if you're asking whether I'm going to slide down the slippery slope, no, I'm not sorry he's dead, but I won't give him the satisfaction of becoming what he wanted me to be. And Clark's just like, that's all I needed to hear, Bruce. Gotcha.
Yeah, and they're watching over, so Joker was Joker poisoning everybody in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his whole thing, the spread where you have Batman tied up, is he was making a twist on Batman's origin by shooting the parents.
And then the
kids
becoming Jokers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all these Joker-eyes kids that they're watching over.
So he's this little last note right here is Clark going, I'll be administering their treatment myself. They need to deal with someone that they can't hurt. A psychologist spoke to one of them this afternoon. He tried to bite out her throat. And Batman just goes, ha! And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That wasn't funny.
Yeah.
My bad. That's my bad. So then we cut to the Batcave, and Batman puts these kids, he puts the Bat family through a simulation of a train simulation that's way more intense than they can handle. And he's like, I did this so that you guys would, like, be ready to fight me because there's something I haven't told you. The Joker toxin is inside me. When he killed the Joker, he went to make sure that the Joker still existed. So he turned me into the Joker.
And it's like the whole thing is this is nightmare fear of Batman that what if – I mean, there is, like, a Joker toxin.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It'll turn people into, like, Joker versions. But what if there is a more pure version that is only released when the Joker dies?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. It, like, came out of his heart or some shit. And – it only infects the person right there. That person becomes...
That kills him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so this might be a little bit of a lean towards, like, the whole end of the Dark Side War where there's three Jokers. It might also... It might also just be a really, really twisted nightmare version of Batman.
I mean, I think that's what it is. This is like... Cause all these are just Batman's worst possible nightmares.
Yeah. So what we have here is... Batman goes, that's why I brought you here. And Jason Todd says, well, we're here to help. And Batman goes, no, not to help, Jason. I brought you here because the four of you would notice something was wrong with me before anyone else would. And I'm sorry, but I can't allow that. And Nightwing goes, Bruce, what are you doing? Next page, Bruce kills every one of the Bat family.
Something you weren't prepared for.
He pulls out two machine guns. He's just like, kills every one of them.
Damn.
Except Damian.
Because Damian isn't there. They're in the training. They're talking about, like, where's Damian? We haven't seen Robin in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. 1 week later, we end up on the Watchtower, and Superman's the only one left alive, and he's bleeding from his eyes. And Joker Batman is now like, where are we at? Oh, yeah, Joker's got this black piece of kryptonite. It only took a little push, and he did it to himself. Gave me the idea for what I'm going to do to you. This is a modified strand of black kryptonite. When I tested it on Supergirl, she ripped her family apart before it killed her. And Superman is there with Lois and John. And he goes, Batman goes, I know, catch! And he throws it at John and Superman. And they react first. And, Clark goes, Lois, stand back. And John goes, Ma, what's happening? And then Clark, John, stand back. They rip Lois apart. Because then it goes, is the thing you hear.
Yeah, and also in the scene, we see what happened to Damian.
Yeah, he becomes a vampire Robin, essentially.
Yeah.
And then he's the hooded one right there.
Oh, there he is. Okay, yeah.
It's just ridiculous. So then the Bat Who Laughs finally devolves into what we've known of him so far, what we've seen of him. Talks about the deal with Barbados and how he was happy to make his own world suffer and
then just let it fall into darkness.
Absolutely. But then Barbados comes like, hey, you want to do that again? Do you want to do that an infinite amount of times? And then do you also want to do that to the people above us? And Bat Who Laughs is like, huh. Yes. Yes, I absolutely do.
Sounds fucking great.
I do.
Right? And then we cut back to the card game, and the Bat Who Laughs has been telling this stuff to a basically mummified and bloody person.
We don't know who it is, and I think it's going to be important.
We never find out who it is, but he basically show him the spread where it hit, where it show like what's waiting for him to say go.
The Bat Who Laughs is like, you just want to know what's coming. You're dying to find out. Let me show you. And shows him a vision of basically Batman's nightmares are just the beginning. Once they take over, it's
hell.
Everybody.
It's just hell. So there's like a Green Lantern with a ring in his empty head. There's a dark side version of Superman.
There's a Green Lantern Parallax.
There's a Brainiac Superman.
No, it's a Parasite Superman.
Oh, Parasite Superman.
Well, there's also
a
Brainiac Superman.
Yeah, right there, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you meant the big one. Yeah.
No. Martian Manhunter's just Martian Manhunter in the background there.
Yeah.
Dr. Fate is looking like kind of vampiric. But yeah, there's just all this shit, and he says, they're coming. Every nightmare this multiverse has ever had. They are armed and ready for invasion, waiting for the door to open, waiting for my command. And basically, it's like, see you next week, folks.
Yeah, and this person chained up, I mean, I want to throw a guess that this is...
It's Tommy.
Tommy.
I don't know who
Bruce's childhood friend. I don't know who it is at all. Because it's not Bruce.
It's not Bruce, but I think it's either somebody minor, like, it's one of the guys who was in that bar that they killed in the last issue of Metal, or it's somebody important. Like, that's... like Jason Todd or something.
Mm-hmm. Alfred.
Or Alfred.
Alfred would be a good one.
Or even It's the Joker.
Like our Joker.
Yeah.
Like Joker from our world.
Yeah.
Like Earth Zero or whatever.
I don't think they actually would go that way, but I mean, I think that whoever it is going to be important in metal.
Yeah. I'm
Harley Quinn. I'm trying to think of other people that have ties to Batman and the Joker.
Could be Harley. Could be like the... What if it was like White Knight Harley?
What if it's Gordon?
Gordon's a good one.
Yeah.
I am so fucking stoked for Metal. Metal is still doing well.
Yeah, and we're in, you know, a couple days here. We're going to get Metal number 4. And then I think
that's
after
next
that...
month. That's next month. There's no Metal for the rest of November.
I thought the next one came out this next week.
I'll check. Yeah, it's in the back of that issue. So maybe it is 11/22. If it's 11/22, we get Metal number 4 this week. Wow, we got 2 DC Comics?
It doesn't say...
There should be a checklist in there somewhere.
It's not.
Lame.
Yeah. But it was going to say it's a... There's another... So all these Dark
Knights
one-shots are sort of ancillary titles, but there's another one coming called The Wild Hunt?
There's Batman Found, The Wild Hunt, and then Dark Knights 4 and 5.
Yeah, it was Batman Lost, Batman Found, and The Wild Hunt.
Yeah, The Wild Hunt is Grant Morrison's.
Yeah, those three are, I think, the titles that are... more connected to the actual main story than these side stories.
Yeah, like Batman Lost was way connected to the main story. But this was really cool because you, like, instead of seeing, like, so the rest of them has been like, here's the origin of this Dark Knight, and then here's what they do to the cities on Earth. This one was just like, here's the devolution of Batman as the Joker.
Oh, yeah, the rest of them didn't destroy the world. I mean, maybe you could argue
they destroyed their worlds. They definitely destroyed their worlds. The drowned his world, and it went into this. And then that's when Batman Who Laughs shows up. The Dawnbreaker definitely wraps his world in the void, and then Batman Who Laughs shows up.
You're right.
The Superman one.
Devastating doomsday virus to everybody.
Yeah.
But so, I think they saved the best for last.
Absolutely. This was amazing. I highly recommend. Even if you're just reading the main Metal story, pick this one up because he's the main bad guy.
Yeah, he is.
Him in Barbados, but it's really like it's him. It's really him. This is Black Hand to Necron. That's what I equate it to.
Yeah, like the end of the book is going to be them beating Barbados, but this is the bad guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got a little bit of time. Well, let's say we got about 15 minutes. You want to talk about Justice League, folks?
It was decent.
It was. I liked it, dude. I have to say,
I did not like it.
So it's.
I could watch it again.
Yeah, it's leaps and bounds above Suicide Squad for one, but it's also it's also like one or two levels above Batman vs Superman in goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys find that the? Do you feel
mostly because it made like some modicum of sense?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel that the critique of it's like two movies put together? Do you feel that's true?
In some ways. It's not as bad as it was in Batman vs. Superman. Really, that was two completely different movies stapled together.
Yeah, and it was. It was also like five different storylines put together.
Yeah.
You had Crisis on Infinite Earths, Dark Knight Returns, what do we got?
Death of Superman.
Death of Superman.
Yeah.
And then a couple other ones in
there, really
too.
They really toned down like their pulls from comics in this.
Yeah.
And told a story that, while it was... I mean, I don't want to put people off watching it, because I think at some point you should.
I think everybody should watch it, to be honest. I think they finally did a good Superman movie.
It wasn't a great story, but at the very least, like, B followed A kind of thing throughout the story, you know? Like, it made sense what was going on. There was no moment where crazy shit happens because they have the same mom name.
Yeah.
Like, just these tiny little twists that really, like, come on, it's
fucking
dumb.
So, the last critique we had about Batman vs. Superman was moments versus scenes. And this, I felt that there were scenes that earned the moments, you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, like, there was no, yeah, like, in Batman vs. Superman, they had these, like, Batman in the armor and all this shit, and it wasn't really earned, there's no weight.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's good, like, here's the man, there's good moments in scenes that set them up well.
So I think one of the scenes that makes you earn a moment, we're not going to go too far into spoilers, but we're going to do a little bit of spoilerage, okay? One of the scenes that earns that moment, like the awesome moments, is probably like Aquaman and them all together in the Batplane on the way to the climax, where he's sitting, like they all actually give a motivation, and then we get Aquaman's last, and him...
But it's a big, at first it was a little sad because it's a big exposition dump.
But then at the end you realize it's a turn. And you get the not only the humor, but you get a little bit of honesty from this big burly, like, your adrenaline spiking. We can't have that right now.
Yeah.
You get this thing from him, and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And that earns moments later on where they actually start to actually work together. They never work together on the level like the Avengers work together in the first one, where like there's, Iron Man bounces off the cap and stuff.
There's maybe one scene where they kind of approach that, and that's the very beginning of the end fight where they're entering the city.
Yeah.
Where Batman's in the Batmobile.
Yeah, they
and
all...
The others are around him. That approaches it, but yeah.
When Wonder Woman pulls those guys off of him and stuff like that. Yeah,
they never have a like Avengers where it's a one take... You know, one take in quotes scene where it pans over everybody and they're all doing something.
But that was
but they also work
so
together.
Good in Avengers.
Oh, yeah. It was fucking incredible.
Well, real quick side note. I finished my beer. I give up, but I think it's an amber.
Well, we're not going to reveal it till the end, but I think you said mine's not an IPA.
It is not.
It's a double IPA.
I wouldn't be that kind of a stickler.
Hey, don't feel bad. Mine's an ale.
But yeah, so Justice League is decent.
Any standout moments for you guys? I'm down to spoil.
The Flash in general, I think, is good. The way he runs sucks.
Yeah, terrible.
He looks like a spastic, but...
I'm down with him. Like, they've definitely aged him down quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, well, no, because he's not Barry in this. He is Barry, but...
He's Wally more than anything.
He's Bart.
Okay, yeah.
Like, personality is Bart, which is fine. It works for me, because... In this, he's not a forensic investigator.
Not yet.
He gets his
job. Yeah,
he
gets
his criminal degree at the very, very.
He doesn't
end
even
of
have
it.
A degree. He just has a job.
Yeah,
oh, that's right.
Like
yeah,
he's like it's the worst. It's the worst job in the crime lab, but it's a job.
Yeah.
One thing that did kind of bother me, and this is something that I talked to with Josh before the show, is at the very end. Well, okay, so huge spoilers here.
Earmuffs.
It's not huge spoilers, but it's fair. It's. End of movie spoilers. Throughout the movie, you find out that the Kent farm has been foreclosed on, and then at the end, Batman goes
and buys it,
back, and gets it back for him. Batman wouldn't have let that thing get foreclosed on after.
So
Batman
yeah, I agreed. I agreed with Adam on this because Bruce was there to bury Clark.
Yeah,
Bruce
and
went there.
They became friends
of...
at the end of it, and Bruce has this huge emotional turnaround because of Clark's death.
No, they didn't become friends in Batman vs Superman. They started working together, and then
it took Superman's
death. Fighting, and 2 hours later, Superman died.
Yeah,
right.
They never became friends.
They never became friends, but
by the end of it, I would say Bruce respected him enough that he would have made sure to take care of Martha.
Yeah,
and I think that's where Adam's going.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like he would not have let Clark's childhood home get foreclosed on by the bank. He would have at least picked it up and been like, you can stay there for free.
It's a small nitpick. It really is.
But it really took me out, like, sure. To be honest. It was one of those things where
like
it was just
We never see him have contact with Lois. I
or
mean,
Martha.
He very easily could have just... I mean,
he has contact with Lois?
Only as Batman.
Oh, that's true.
Only as Batman.
But Batman and Bruce are the same people. Like, she doesn't need to know that, but he still could have taken care of it.
But,
Bruce Wayne could have done it as a, oh, Superman was so... okay, listen. He's the world's greatest detective. He would have figured it out.
Here's the thing. He already fucking knows.
He already knew.
I think it kind of plays into... Wonder Woman mentions his guilt about it. Like, I think, if anything, he distanced himself from it.
I can see that.
Like, he just didn't... He felt too bad to even, like, look into what was going on with his family.
Another one of those scenes that I think that earned a lot of the cool moments was when Batman came in and Wonder Woman had to reset his shoulder.
Oh, yeah. No, that was good.
I like that because you see Batman's weakness, you see her care for him, but then also they share a drink together.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is a scene between two people. This isn't a scene between two gods of DC.
Yeah.
That was something I think they did really well, was the sort of relationship between the two.
Mm-hmm.
As like,
I love how Alfred mentions it first. Like, you could call her. It's like, why didn't you call her?
Yeah. Like, because they're the two that survived the last movie, and that's really the only relationship they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of the things that Bruce says to her at some points to kind of get her riled up make sense, and especially after seeing Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it's just the Steve Trevor comment. Like, he even is like, twice before he mentions it, he's like, or twice before he apologizes, he goes, I shouldn't have fucking done that.
Yeah.
Really shouldn't have fucking done that.
It's two people that are basically friends. They're the two, that's the closest relationship in the movie, is that they're friends.
Yeah.
Even if they never really, it's not like they're friends who might like, hey, what are you doing today? Let's go get some lunch. Yeah. But, like, they're friends.
What do they say is people that have gone to war with each other, even though they may never talk or don't talk, but once a year, people that have, like, gone to actual combat stay tighter than any other relationship that they ever build.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's... That was my favorite relationship of the movie, even though Flash and Cyborg was funnier.
Dude, so where are the accidents? Yeah. It's racially charged. Oh, yeah.
We haven't even mentioned Aquaman is the dopest character in the movie.
I agree. Oh, yeah. I think they went out of their way to make sure that people took Aquaman seriously, I think.
Like, Arthur Curry as a character in comics is sort of one-note and lame sometimes.
Yeah.
It's very easy. Okay, I guess not lame, but like he doesn't really have like a deep characterization to himself.
He doesn't have a journey.
Exactly. He's just like this stoic dude, and he's great against other characters, but he as himself, he's just sort of like this stoic dude that has this duty to Atlantis and the human world.
Yeah.
But Jason Momoa's Aquaman kind of has that bit, but it's more just like he's a dude who is sort of like, you know what, I fuck this shit.
Like you abandoned me. Fuck this up.
I'm going to do my own shit. Right? And then he's just like a real-ass dude. Like, yeah. Especially right after Batman meets him for the first time and they're walking to the shore.
And he's just stripping down and he's like, stripping down,
he's talking to him. He's basically just talking shit to him.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like,
you dress like a bat? Really?
It's
I dig it.
It worked for 20 years.
It's fantastic. I really hope that they keep that up for the Aquaman movie.
I know you guys will disagree with me, but I liked Mira.
I didn't like Mira because I think Mira is better as somebody that Aquaman like really knows. I like their relationship, and in this movie, they have none.
Well, because it's the first time they've met. I think. If it's not the first time they've met, then it's like the second time they've met.
I get the impression that they knew each other.
Yeah.
But from
what we know from Jason Momoa's Aquaman is it's like Arthur Curry, his dad died, and then now he's this.
Yeah.
Because obviously,
his mom left him on the doorstep.
Atlanta left him on the doorstep and stuff like that. And so, like, and Mira has to know of him, but that's about it, right?
Yeah, like, that's kind of the impression I get is that he mentions that Atlantis wants things from him and he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Mira mentions his responsibility as Queen Atlanta's son. Like, they know
first
each
son.
Other.
They even said first son.
Yeah, first
because
son.
Because Ocean Master's there.
They, I get the impression that they knew each other, they know each other. Have been introduced and have talked, but they don't have any kind of relationship.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
They know who each other is, but that's, like, the extent.
So, like, I have no problem with that coming out in the Aquaman movie. Because I really like their dynamic. So, and if it evolves better, I'd like to see that. I love this first introduction of Mira because you see her as a badass, and then...
No, that's true. Like, when she's fighting against Steppenwolf, she uses her powers in a pretty good way.
Right,
like
he's that. Going at it, I and like then makes scene. Her dive, makes her fall, makes him fall, and you're just like, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
they great. Use it really well.
Yeah.
It's not like you might see in a comic where she just, like, shoots a gust of water at him. Like, she uses her powers
to make, like, to make no water. Way. Yeah,
which I thought was a really cool way for, like, her and Aquaman to have, like, even though there were other people
there.
But
have a private conversation.
They have a private conversation in that air bubble, yeah.
So let's see what else we got when we're ending. Humor. Let's end on the humor.
It's all Joss Whedon humor.
Oh my god, it is.
But
it has
all good
to be.
Because of it. Like,
yeah, I mean, probably the worst one is. I mean, I don't even want to kind of spoil, but Batman makes a comment when he gets his ass beat.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Something's bleeding.
Yeah, like that was the only thing that was sort of out of place. But the rest of it worked for the most part.
I think
especially
so too.
The Flash.
The Flash, anytime he had a moment, it was like, yeah, that's pretty, that's and well it, earned and it's funny.
And yeah, it wasn't because he was like,
if she kills
lies.
You, we're going to cover this up.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's because of who he is at the time. He's like this squatter.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a home. He's can't hold down a job kind of thing.
Right.
And this is just, he's basically a kid. And like he even said, he doesn't fight. He just runs fast.
I,
and
I,
so like,
I push
you throw
things.
Him into this world and he's just like, oh, fuck.
I did like the scene between him and Batman
where he's like, save one
person.
And then he's like, then you'll know what to do.
And then he saves one person, and then the next time you see him, that room is full of fucking people.
Yeah.
Like,
it's good.
Yeah.
It's a good way to do that. I like that too, because Batman, as a teacher, knows. Like, he knows the feeling of, like, you saved this person.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll do it again. And you'll do it again.
And you'll want to keep doing it, because you'll know more people need your help.
Okay, so let's go with best joke in the movie. My favorite joke in the movie is when Flash gets the truck to safety and then looks to his right and Superman's carrying a building.
That was pretty damn good. I like when Batman pushes Wonder Woman and she starts to threaten him and the Flash basically tells him, you know, if she kills you, we'll cover for her, right?
Yeah,
that was really good.
That was a good one.
Yeah, honestly, I'd have to say it's probably that one. That one or literally you do dress like a bat. I dig it.
Yeah. Like, the Aquaman joke at Batman.
Yeah.
One worth mentioning is when Superman comes back to life. Spoilers. When Superman comes back to life, Flash tries to run around him, and that Superman, was a great scene. He looks, and he looks at the Flash, and Flash is like, oh, he can see me. And then he turns his head, and Flash is like, fuck, he's as fast as
me. You know, at first I had a problem with Superman being as fast or possibly faster than the Flash.
Uh-huh.
But also...
It's also a young Flash.
Well, it's also a Flash who has not... as appropriate to Flash, he has spent his time running away from this.
Yeah.
He hasn't, like, explored his abilities.
The Speed Force or anything like that, yeah.
So, like, what I think that when he actually does... You know,
you'll see that full speed run through the future. Like,
yeah. And I mean, because we already know he's going to reach that point
where he's going to be literally faster.
Well,
than
we literally know that because we saw it in Batman vs Superman. He's like, I came back too far.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. But that was a dream.
Was it?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
No, he was totally dreaming.
No, because papers move. It literally happened.
Anyway.
Batman's a heavy sleeper.
I would doubt that.
So heavy that when he wakes up, he throws his hand out and throws papers across the room.
Why else would he be sleepies?
He's super
tired.
That
makes no sense. But anywho,
I recommend going to see Justice League. I think they got something here. Also, there's a little bit of tie-ins from Danny Elfman's Batman theme and John Williams' Superman theme.
Yeah,
and
they use that really well.
And Wonder Woman's theme is still in there, too. Yeah. Her introduction to the film is great.
Oh, yeah, it is.
She starts off the movie almost.
This might be... it's not on the same tier, but if you, Batman vs. Superman... Okay, on the count of three, what's the best scene?
The fight. The Batman vs. Superman.
One, two, three. No. The warehouse.
Oh, the warehouse, whatever, yeah.
I think...
Oh, when Batman's in the warehouse.
Yeah, I think
that 1, 2, 3 really fell short for you, because we didn't understand what was going on.
I was gonna... Yeah, whatever. You just went. But anyways, that's... The warehouse fight's the best scene in Batman vs. Superman, like, action scene-wise.
Like, single-person action scene? Sure.
Yeah, I think that Wonder Woman's introduction is kind of this movie's equivalent. Not as good... But it's just like somebody who was in their element doing their shit.
But her blocking the shots along the the row of people, that's fucking dope.
Yeah, like it shows off her abilities really well.
Yeah. Plus, like, just that face she has at the end, she's like, "You got any more?" Like, love that. Like her scene in Batman vs Superman when Doomsday hits her,
and she smiles,
and she's like, "Cool, boom."
No, actually, I don't have to hold back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John brought up how, like, when Superman was fighting Steppenwolf, that he thought of the, like, living a world full of cardboard.
Oh, yeah.
A world made of cardboard. I was like, that's a good point. Like, Superman probably unloaded on Steppenwolf a little bit hard.
As we were walking up to you guys after that, I was telling Adam, like, the one thing I didn't like about that fight is, clearly, this is my problem with the DC movies so far, is they're all about destruction, which is fine. But here's the thing. You're in this place where you don't want this to crumble because of what you're trying to do right at that moment. You need this...
You need the structure to stay up because Cyborg and Batman are trying to work this
Superman
out.
Superman can throw Steppenwolf to the goddamn moon, and this whole area...
It happens inside the tube.
But there's so many views into the outside. Just throw him across town and go fight him over there.
Not east. Another thing.
So this is... And this doesn't really, you know, have anything to say towards the movie, but there were a lot of reviews online who were just like, oh, Superman is finally able to just unload on Steppenwolf. We finally see the full power of Superman. It's
not
just
really.
Like, no. Like, if anything, you see it when he fights Zod.
Yeah, that's when you see the
in
unload.
In Man of Steel.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
that's Superman unleashing.
He punches him, like, 6 times.
Yeah. I mean, he punches him hard, but... Again, Zod is Superman unleashing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this will bring us to the end of the show. Let's look at our beers. I'm confused.
Let's make one final guess.
It's a pale ale.
No. What is it?
Hub pale ale.
No.
Oh, it's an Abominable Winter Ale from Hub.
Yeah.
Nice. That's a good beer, though. I liked it.
Good. I know you did a winter ale, what, last week or the week before?
Yeah.
So that was your sweater.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the decision on that. And I also really liked the label.
The label's dope.
I like the face.
It reminds me of the Rudolph, the
right? Yeah.
The Rankin Bass.
Where I got the name for Bramble.
Yeah.
I tried to... Chris wouldn't let me play a Yeti.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I have from Alesmith Brewing Company. I want to say it's an IPA, but you're telling me it's not.
It's not. And remember, I went after your buying conventions.
You did, and I don't know Alesmith logos well enough to really go off of that. So I'm going to say it's some kind of... God, it's not a Belgian. Or is it? It's some kind of double. Oh, shit, it's a red ale. Son of a bitch. Evil Dead Red.
Keep reading.
Evil Dead Red Ale.
Yeah, but look at like the ABUs or the ABVs.
I don't think know if it lists it on the bottom.
Right fucking there, you blind motherfucker.
Oh, it's 6 point. Oh, okay. I thought you said IBUs for some reason. I was thinking about IPAs. Yeah, it's 6.66% by volume. Evil Dead Red, good stuff.
I thought you'd like it.
It was, I mean, it started out a little, you know, like you drink an IPA and the first couple sips is like really, but after that you settle into it.
No, because I like them, so.
Yeah, well, that's how I experience them. But no, yeah, by the end of this, I like this
beer. So it's more of an amber ale than it is an IPA, but yeah, it's a red ale.
So I'm going to go, it's definitely cinnamony.
I'm going to go drink some more.
I'm going to go cinnamon beer.
Okay, but that's not a type of beer. Give me the style of beer. Guess a style.
A cinnamon blonde. I know I'm way off because I'm terrible at guessing beers.
I already
beers.
Told you what you were half right at.
Cinnamon dark ale.
You're still not right, but pull it up.
That sounded amazing.
Oh, it's an imperial ale.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Cinnamon roll imperial ale. This is actually pretty good.
Southern tier. Very
ale
nice.
Ale with natural yeah. cinnamon and caramel flavors added.
It is, so like you said, it is cinnamon roll ale.
Yeah. Like it was fucking good. It was good. I'm glad that we all, nobody fucked with anybody on this one.
No, it was all good stuff.
Yeah. Everybody actually got something that they thought the other person would dig.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to this week. Be sure to check out Comics Replays on Wednesday, where there's a bit of a shakeup. Later this week are going to be asking you for your advice on something coming up for one of our characters. Please be sure to check that episode out. Be sure to check out Waiting for Players. They've been doing Guardians of the Galaxy streaming, which has been great, the Telltale series. I really wish Tyler would have been there for the last one because we got a little bit of Rocket backstory and it involved Lila. And it was dope.
Who the fuck's Lila?
His lover, Otter.
Oh, that's hot.
Yep.
Yeah, that's some old school, like,
old school
Mignola
Guardians
era Rocket Raccoon shit.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, the whole episode was centered around it.
Is she fucked up like Rocket is?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. He comes from like a whole planet, like his original origin comes from a whole planet of weird animal things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but Lila and him were imprisoned together, and they broke out together, but Lila died on the escape.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was all that episode, so be sure to check out Waiting for Players. They're going to be doing episode 3 very shortly, if not last weekend. And then also, you know, be sure to check out Science Nights. They're going to be taking a break for Thanksgiving, so because they usually release on Thursdays. So there's no Science Nights this week, but, you know, be sure to come back next week when they talk about something new. Other than that,
you guys should do like a holiday one, like why does turkey actually make you sleepy? Or
tryptophan? And no, we're not going to do that.
But fuck you, my idea. I'm keeping it for my own podcast. Adam Does Science Stuff, coming to you first 2018.
Bullshit, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Later.